Welcome to the 155 Election Podcast. Interviews with candidates running for mayor, city council, and school board trustee in Hamilton, Ontario. Episode 150. Ian McPherson, you are running for city councilor in Ward 1. Welcome to the 155 Election Podcast.
Thank you, Joe.
Firstly, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm really just a regular Hamiltonian. I've lived in Hamilton, specifically Ward 1, all my life. All my schooling has been done in Ward 1, from Strathcona to McMaster and everything in between. And like most people within Hamilton and Ontario and the world, I've had my struggles. I was born with a rare neuromuscular disease, which ended me up in a wheelchair. And on a ventilator, so if I have to pause throughout this, it's just to catch my breath. And if I sound like Darth Vader, I do apologize.
Why are you running?
Throughout my lifespan, I've been involved with politics on and off. And I just found now is the time to put my name in the hat, as I see a lot of things wrong with Hamilton. The council is definitely not coherent or cohesive. And I think it's time that we get new blood in there with fresh ideas and people that look outside the box at the various of problems, not just one problem, as every problem has about three problems attached to it. I think I can bring that to city council.
Do you live in Ward 1, yes or no?
Yes, I do.
Does it matter if one lives in the community one seeks to represent?
Well, Joy, that I think it definitely does help. As I've said, I've lived in Ward 1 all my life. I know the neighborhood. I know what needs done. I've seen the changes throughout. But when it comes to wards, they are quite large. So I'm really not in tune with what happens in the far west. But I believe if you're coherent and you have the proper skills and you know what needs done and you're willing to fight for what needs done, it doesn't really matter, but it definitely does have its advantages 100%.
How have you contributed to your community and our city?
I have volunteered throughout my lifespan. I volunteered with Challenger Baseball, which is the connection between me and Anthony. I volunteered with a political party to help create a disability delegate, but after helping them form that, I had to leave due to financial reasons, which is, you know, just volunteering doesn't help put food on the table. And I think that's issue with most Hamiltonians, but my greatest accomplishment extends past Hamilton and extends throughout Canada when I helped form the Canadian Association of Pompeii. And through that organization, we lobbied the government, dealt with many bureaucrats, many government officials to fund the life-saving treatment for Pompeii. And after years of going through those red tape and hoops and all that, we accomplished to do so. So that was something I'm very proud of and something I'm proud of.
What are two of your priorities for Ward 1 and two of your priorities for Hamilton as a whole?
So for Ward 1, I definitely want to make a safer community through roads and with community policing. I know there has been a lot of issues lately and throughout the last few years of carrying the relationship between police and community. And I hope to maybe bring that back. And as crime rises throughout Hamilton and within Ward 1, at quite a significant percentage, I believe that by bringing back community policing, we maybe help deter that crime. But also, I believe that with community policing, police will gain relationships with individuals in the neighborhood, whether it be homeowners or people that are unfortunately addicted to drugs or have mental health issues, so that when time comes to deal with those individuals in a forcible manner, they already have a connection. So hopefully it would lessen the aggression between both parties. And I'd also like to see social workers involved with policing, as police are not trained to deal with that sort of issue. And it does attain for over 60%. Of the calls they handle. So I believe with a social worker by their side, they could de-escalate a lot of those issues. And as far as streets go, I mean, the intersections by where I live are extremely dangerous, Main and Dundurn being one of them. And I unfortunately do not agree with the turning Main into a two-way. I think it will cause a bit more confusion. I would like to see delayed lights and all-way crosswalks installed, which would mean that while pedestrians are crossing in any direction, no car movement is allowed at all. And vice versa, when a car is moving, the other side of the street is not moving as well, so there's a real less chance of car collision as well. And for throughout the city, I wish to do the same thing. Create safer streets and develop maybe some more entertainment districts throughout Hamilton. James Street and Ottawa Street are doing a great job of it. Hess has done a great job of it for years, but I think maybe a few more entertainment districts, especially by Tim Hortons Field, so people can enjoy before and after the game down in that area and build up the economy as well. I think those are some of the ideas I would like to bring to council.
What are three skills you will bring to elected office that makes you the best choice to represent Ward 1 on Hamilton City Council?
I believe I have really good problem-solving skills. And as I said before, that there's one problem, but around that problem, there's probably three other problems that need addressed at the same time. And I believe problem-solving and negotiation is a big key in politics, and maybe that's been lost throughout time or within this council, but I believe that's a huge asset I can bring to council. Also, my perseverance. I persevered a lot, as a lot of people have within Hamilton, and I just won't stop until I see progressive and positive change. And I also would bring my temperament. I believe that is something else I have had to deal with throughout my life. While lobbying and fighting for the treatment we fought for with CAP, I was asked a lot of tough questions and I never lost my cool. I always had a discussion and it was always coherent and non-aggressive. And I think that is important in councils. We can all come to the same decision through discussion without argument.
The following preamble leads to questions regarding honesty and transparency. Let's presume you are elected. During your first few weeks, you will be briefed regarding what City Hall refers to as confidential matters. We do not know what confidential matters are presently being withheld from the citizens of Hamilton. All four councillors first elected in 2018 initially voted to support the Coots Paradise cover-up, before three of the new councillors began voting against the continuing cover-up. The Municipal Act prohibits members of council from releasing information the majority of council declares confidential. With this in mind, what principles and advice will help you determine what information should be confidential and what information should be made public?
Well, Joey, throughout my campaign, I've been completely transparent and honest with everybody I've talked to, whether we agree on the situation or not. I've been honest, and I don't believe there should be any secrets from the public when it comes to health or economics or anything like that. I mean, sure, if there's discussion within the council and someone gets heated or what have you, that should maybe stay private. But as far as stuff that involves the community, I don't believe there should be any secrets. I look at politics like politicians are the CEOs. Constituents and the public are the owners and the shareholders. So if a CEO was to hold vital information from the owner or the shareholders, that CEO would be fired. And I think the same should apply for us municipal councillors and our mayor.
The Red Hill Inquiry will issue its report early in the next term of council. The revelations regarding how City Hall ignored problems on the expressway and the toxic culture at City Hall which silenced good people are shocking. How do you plan to review and consider the final inquiry report when the commission releases its findings and recommendations?
So again, Joy, to revert to the last question, if findings are found that hold someone accountable for shortcuts or knowingly putting the public in danger to save some money, should 100% be either fined or do jail time. When you're in a spot of responsibility like we are, we should not break the law in any way or try to make shortcuts. And if the councillors knew at the time of this inquiry that no one would truly be held accountable, just names would be released of people accountable, I think they should be accountable for spending up to $26 million in taxpayer money to find out some names and not have any repercussions upon those names. So I truly believe in transparency, honesty, and any counselor that has been involved in holding information from the public or endangering the public should not hold a seat in council ever again.
The construction of the B-Line LRT will begin during this term of council. It will be the largest construction project in Hamilton's recent history. How do you plan to respond to construction challenges and opportunities?
Well, going back, being completely honest and transparent, I personally don't believe Hamilton is ready for the LRT yet. And when we are, I would have liked to see it maybe down Barton Street instead. But now that it is going to be a very big challenge for us councillors to install this LRT system. And I think one thing is for sure, we as a council have to be in tune with one another to get this job done. And we would have to do it in small increments because it is affecting one of the major veins of traffic within Hamilton. I think doing it piece by piece, really understanding the lay of the land and rerouting traffic is very important. I think alerting the public of the alternate routes is very important too before they get to them, because then that's just going to cause another traffic jam as well. So maybe an app or something to let individuals know the detoured routes before they get there. But I also think another big part of this is supporting our small businesses that are going to be affected by this, because it's not going to be a 1 to 2 year job. It's going to be a long time. And these businesses need support to sustain this kind of major construction. So I would like to see something put in place for them as well, because Hamilton is built upon mom and pop shops, and we've already lost too many.
Before we turn to land use planning, let's have a lighter question. What is something interesting or unique within Ward 1 that you believe the rest of Hamilton should know about?
Well, Joy, there are many things that are amazing of Ward 1. One thing we enjoy as a family is just walking around our local park and watching baseball. There are a lot of baseball diamonds within Ward 1, and to have a nightly walk and end it with watching baseball is pretty special. I truly enjoy that.
City Council decides land use planning and zoning. It decides where housing and businesses are located, and the type of housing and businesses which are permitted in locations. There are three questions on this topic. The City of Hamilton is updating its outdated residential zoning bylaw. Zoning across Ward 1 does not conform with the provincial policy statement, Ontario's de facto planning law. In a 32-page decision issued in January, the Ontario Land Tribunal declared the Ainsleywood-Westdale secondary plan, quote, dated, stating the plan has a, quote, detrimental effect on achieving good planning outcomes as envisioned by provincial policy. Updated zoning, if compliant with the policy statement, will return local control over planning. What is your vision for residential zoning in Ward 1, and how will you achieve it?
So, Joey, first I'd like to thank you for sending me the document to read. I did read through it, and I believe it should be case-by-case scenario when it comes to developing within the municipality. I went down and visited the site that we're talking about here, and I don't believe that a 6 to 9 story would be too intrusive on that neighborhood. I ran into a couple locals at that time, and some of them were like, eh, but most of them were receptive. And once I mentioned, which is also in the provincial policy statement, the part about affordability, that some of these units, maybe 15 to 20%, should be affordable. And once I explained what this statement says is affordable, they're all for it. As the statement says, 30% of an annual wage should be the affordable market, which means someone makes $36,000 a year, their one-bedroom apartment should be $850. That is not the case in Hamilton at all. So I believe if we implement something like that within these units, that would be a good achievement for Hamilton. And I noticed right across the street from the site we're talking about, they're planning on installing a 24-story with commercial use at the bottom, which I think is a great idea as well. So I do believe these things should be case by case, and I don't believe that anything higher than 9 stories should be used in a residential area. And if the residential area doesn't really have apartment buildings surrounding it, I don't believe apartments should be above 3 to 4 stories. But yeah, I would say the municipality should look at it case by case, and I would hope that the province wouldn't overreach in this area. And I think as Hamiltonians, we have to realize that if we want our city to grow and expand to over 800,000 people, and we don't want to encroach on the urban areas or in residential neighborhoods, we really have to look at high rises in mixed commercial areas, because that's the only way we're going to achieve it without really encroaching on what Hamilton has to offer as a beautiful city.
Large commercial plaza sites are converting into mixed-use mid-rise development. There are applications along Main Street West through Ward 1 from the Ancaster border to Queen Street. Presently, there is no city planning policy specific to commercial to mixed-use redevelopment. What is your vision for this type of redevelopment, and how will you achieve that vision?
Again, Joey, upon the last question, I totally stand by these developments. I do think it's the only way to reach the 800,000 projected people in Hamilton. And also, it helps individuals within those buildings because they're close to shopping malls, they're close to grocery stores, they have all the amenities that are by them, which will not only help them, but it will help the city as far as traffic and emissions goes as well. And I believe if we can establish some sort of permit for new developers to really adhere to the affordable housing with about 15%, 20% of the units, that would greatly help Hamiltonians as well.
There are four LRT stops planned within Ward 1. The provincial policy statement, Ontario's de facto planning law, defines the 500 meters surrounding LRT stations as major transit station areas. In short, this is where density will be built. What is your vision for major transit station areas, and how will you implement that vision?
Again, I visit these sites. I mean, I live really close to three of them. The one on Queen Street and King Street, it is already being developed into a high-density area. There's condos going up. There's Hess Street right by there, which is full of entertainment. I do think that that station is good as it is. When you go down to Dundurn and King, I know the city owns a lot of houses that are behind the Shoppers and on Dundurn. And if they wanted to install four, maybe five-story buildings there to increase the density, I would have no problem with that as well. And again, the commercial use around that area is already full with the 14 Oaks Plaza. You have the Esso gas station, Shoppers Drug Mart, Tim Hortons, and Three Pot Shop. I think that's pretty full of commercial use right there. And then as you go down to Longwood and King, you have two schools that are there. You have an apartment building and some other stuff that's already there. Across from the one apartment building, you have a little parking lot. Could put another low rise there, as that's what's in that neighborhood for sure. But if you travel down Longwood to Main Street, there's quite a bit of land that is there where you could put a high rise along Longwood. It would be south across from Main. And then on the north side, you have a little bit of land as well. But I believe there's a gas station there, so there may be some permit issues and some environmental issues that would need to attain to. But if you put a nice restaurant there or some other things, I think that would be good for the community, as it's still in walking distance of the LRT. And then as you travel to the last stop at McMaster, already have plans to build two mid-size rises with 1,000 beds for university students. So I think if you put commercial use on the bottom of those with, again, maybe a bar or a restaurant for students to go to, I think it's pretty good. I think Hamilton's done a good job there as far as the LRT stops are concerned.
Road safety is a significant issue in Ward 1. Sadly, it took an extreme death toll this year for City Hall to finally consider safety measures on Main Street. What is your overall plan to address road safety? Please provide three specifics of your plan.
So again, this is a big part of my plan, along with affordable housing, if you already haven't been able to tell. Once again, in all transparency and honesty, I definitely do not agree with turning Main into a two-way. For one, I think it'll cause more confusion. For two, it doesn't address any other major intersection that is dangerous within Ward 1 or throughout the city. If you just walk down the street to Dundurn and King, that intersection is just in bad. So my vision, again, is a scramble crosswalk accompanied by a delayed light system in every major intersection. So when pedestrians are moving, there is no way a car can interfere or hit a pedestrian. When the light is delayed, this would mean that someone coming down Main Street, if they hit a red and they go through it, the adjacent crossings on Dundurn will not move for 5 to 10 seconds. So whether a car runs a red or not, there is very low risk of interfering with another car. Another thing I would do as far as road safety is I would paint the speed limits directly on the road so that people don't have to look around for the speed limit, because in some parts of the city, the speed limit changes within 200 meters from 50 to 30 or even 10 miles an hour. So if you're driving, you automatically see the speed limit and don't have to remove your eyes from the road. I would also like to see speed limits drop a little bit, especially in park and school areas. And I would also enforce infractions via cameras. A big part of street dangers is that people don't adhere to the street speed limit or street rules. So if you were to install cameras, it would catch these individuals, and a $250 fine once or twice should remind the person that this is a dangerous infraction and they should not be doing it. So those are some things I would like to instill. And as far as the delayed light system in Jacksonville, they actually have a computer system that will pick up someone that is about to run the red, and it will stop the other light from turning green. So even if we were to install that system, it would only be about $10,000 per intersection. And I believe that people running reds would pay for that in about 2 years. But again, it would stop collisions at the same time.
Turning to governance and expertise, let's use the idea that it takes 10,000 hours to master a skill or trade and apply it to being a municipal counselor. But one person cannot be an expert in all matters which come before council for decision. How will you gain the necessary learning to be able to make informed decisions? What reading do you do? What professional development will you look for? And what types of people will you seek advice from?
Joey, this is a good question. I believe that, as you said in so many words, not everybody is an expert in every aspect. So us as counselors, we may be experts in one aspect, but not enough. And most of us just have maybe good ideas to implement. I would seek advice from those professionals. What I would implement is a web-based design for Ward 1 that would allow people to engage in conversation of what is being done in Ward 1. And through this, you would see other academics and specialists in that area rise to the top. And you could use their expertise to discuss the expertise with the other person in the room, and maybe come up with a much better plan than one person could come up with. And as far as the 10,000 hours, I believe I've spent 10,000 hours in my community to see what's going on and what needs fixed, but also within my lobbying of the government, I spent a lot of time negotiating, dealing with the media, dealing with bureaucrats, and dealing with politicians all at once. I have done a lot of work in that area, and I believe that's what will set me apart from some of the candidates running from Ward 1. And I would also like to thank you for the public record and Raise the Hammer. They are very good reading materials, and it takes a lot of time, effort to do those. So as a constituent, I would like to thank you for those.
What are two changes you will propose to improve city services?
I believe with the expansion proposed to increase the population to 800,000, I believe sewage and wastewater treatment plants need to be added throughout the city. I know Woodward has just been updated, but it is unreasonable to think that one station can handle everything and to send something so far. I would like to see more plants installed throughout the city to handle all the overflow and stuff. And after-school programs. I would definitely like to see after-school programs brought back. And I would also like to see first responders maybe volunteer to help facilitate these after-school programs. When I was younger, in the 90s, we had a Reach Forth program where we could go after dinner, hang out, play basketball, and gain advice and knowledge from the counselors that were there. So I really believe in after-school programs and bringing the community back together again with first responders and as a community as a whole.
What are two changes you will propose to improve quality of life in Hamilton?
Again, affordable housing would be my main goal, as it has become an overwhelming crisis in the city. And I believe the HATS program is a great program as a stepping stone to individuals getting off the street. And then after being with the HATS program for a while, eventually attaining an apartment or a place of residence. I would like to see that. And also, as previously mentioned, the 30% affordability of one's income, I would like to see implemented. I know we can't go backwards, but as we move forward, if we could maybe make that a permit application for new builders to make 15 to 20% of the residents within their new building affordable, that would be great. And also making recreation and activities more accessible for kids with families of low income. I believe that's extremely important as well, as it gives kids a sense of belonging to the community and not ostracizing them due to something as silly as financial status. I believe we as a community, again, need to grow and strengthen, and I believe this is the way to do so.
It's 2026. The Public Record is writing a review of the four-year council term that is just ending. What three words do you hope we will use to describe your term on council, and what three words do you hope will describe council as a whole?
For myself, Joy, I hope you would describe me as I got stuff done. Those are the three words I want beside my name, because I believe as a councillor, we need to do stuff throughout our tenure, not 6 months after election and 6 months before election. We need to work the whole term, and I hope to achieve what I want to achieve and get it done. And as far as council, I hope you describe it as one of the most honest and transparent councils there's ever been, one of the most coherent and cohesive councils, and respectable. And again, it got stuff done. As a council, we need to work together to improve this city and not let our personal opinions and our personal bias get in the way of making the best decision for the city we represent.
Thank you. That's the end of the prepared questions you were sent in advance. Do you have any closing remarks you wish to share?
Again, Joey, I just really want to thank you for taking the time to do this. It takes a lot of time, a lot of dedicated effort, and we appreciate it as a city. Well, I know I do. I hope the rest of the city does as well. And win or lose, I just hope that the constituents really take advantage of the privilege they're given of voting. It's a very important part of the process. It gives you a voice, and I really hope to see votership up in this election for sure.
Thank you. And lastly, how do people find out more about your platform and get in touch with you?
You can go to my social media links, or you can go to my website at ian4ward1.ca. That's IAN4WARD1.ca.
This has been episode 150 of the Public Records, the 155 podcast. Thank you to the Hamilton Public Library for the use of their makerspaces to record these podcasts. Thank you to the readers and listeners of the Public Record for your support. You can visit thepublicrecord.ca to get more City Hall coverage, sign up for my City Hall newsletter, and become a member of the press club to keep me covering Hamilton City Hall. Thank you.